Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. I hope you've had a good week. I was just looking at my calendar recently and realized we're only about 3 weeks away from Christmas. Another year is almost over. It's pretty amazing. But one thing I wanted to bring up, since it's almost Christmas time, something we do each year at Agenda is we have some of our materials available, the books, the movies, and the things that we offer. This right here is a pack we call the Freedom Fighter, and I just wanted to let you know about it. It's 50% off on our website. It gives you 10 separate items to give to like-minded family and friends for Christmas gifts or whatever, but it's a way for you to have more influence right where you are, just using the resources we've provided. But I wanted to let you know about that. We also have available Agenda Weekly subscriptions that you can do in a gift format to give to people this time of year. But wanted to let you know about that. That helps fund what we do, and it helps you make a bigger difference right where you are. So today, we're going to be dealing with the heart and mind aspects of fifth generation warfare. You might say, what's fifth generation warfare? Well, we're going to talk about that. But as anybody knows, as you study history, warfare has changed dramatically over the last several hundred years. Remember the pictures you've seen back of even the Civil War, where people lined up in rows and then fired at each other? And it seems crazy when you look at it now, like, why would you stand there and let someone shoot at you? But we're going to talk through the different generations of warfare, how it's changed. And today we have bots on the internet starting disinformation campaigns to persuade and manipulate the public to do things they want them to do and things. So things have changed a lot, but that's what we're going to talk about this week. I appreciate you joining me. Those of you that are not subscribers, please consider going to agendaweekly.com and sign up there, where we can send you all the different resources we provide each week. A news brief, prayer and action items, different videos and articles that we think will help you better understand the times. And it's a great blessing to us when you do that. But thanks again. A few news stories I'd like to bring up before we get into the topic for today. The first thing is, in Iran right now, in Brazil and China, there are massive protests going on for freedom. And our media and government are completely ignoring it, or they're even siding with the totalitarians that are abusing these people. And the reality is, when totalitarians, when elites see people rising up, it creates tremendous fear in them, because they realize if enough people rise up and the protests grow, they could be in trouble really quickly, even if they have a big military. Why? Because the military is made up of people. And as people that live in that country start to see their own citizens, their fellow brothers and sisters and cousins standing up for something, a lot of times it causes them to join in. And then the power is gone instantly. I don't care if it's a communist dictatorship like in Romania, when the people said, no, we're just standing up, it crumbled overnight. When enough people were committed enough to the cause where they realized, I don't care if I die or not. That's the point, and we'll talk about it a little bit more later. But that's the point you have to be at to have the possibility of stopping tyranny that's over you. This little clip I want to show you shows some of the protests going on in Brazil. Because, again, our media is not covering this, but look at the crowds. They say some of the individual crowds in different places are 3, 4, 5 million people in one place. They think the biggest crowds ever in world history of people all coming together for something. But watch this clip, and at the end of the clip, someone put it together with a clip from an animated movie that has a key point that we'll talk about in a second. Watch this.
Alexandre de Moraes is the minister of the Supreme Court of Brazil, who just ordered the banks to block the accounts of anyone supporting the historic protest. If people all over the world took to the streets like the people of Brazil, then the imminent global tyranny would be eradicated. And this is why the media ignores it. They are hoping you just stay home and watch it, like a movie, until it arrives at your front door and it's too late.
Say, let's pretend this grain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line.
Did you see the protest? The people, the energy. Did you see the little animation? That's exactly what it is. They get scared to death when people start protesting. That's why they did what they did at January 6th, just exaggerate it so we'd be afraid to protest. That's why they are squashing protests all over the world and have been for 2 years during COVID. They can't let those things grow, but I thought that clip was so powerful. I saw that. Now, while that's going on, of course, it's going on in China, too. And Apple, we need to stop using Apple. I have an Apple phone. I have an Apple computer. We have to commit to never buying another Apple product. We can't do it. What they've been doing over there is they turned off the AirDrop feature on all of their phones so everyone in China cannot AirDrop information to each other. You think, well, what's the big deal about that? That's the only way to get information around when you're in a communist country. You can't text them because they'll read that. You can't do something on social media. They'll read that, and then they'll come hunt you down and torture you. So, but if you're in a crowd, you can AirDrop information to different people, and they can keep spreading it around to organize protests or give information to people they didn't know about. And Apple decided to side with the communists. And I know Tucker talked about that this week, but we need to remember that. That's an enemy of our country, Apple. It's an enemy. And they're trying to squelch and squash freedom everywhere. So we need to stop supporting them. One last little news story that was significant. The Secretary of Health, Becerra, said, quote, "An updated COVID vaccine can help protect you from the worst outcomes of COVID. If it's been over 2 months since your last dose, make a plan to get one now." Just when all the information's come out, how dangerous the shots are, and all the health problems that are coming about from people taking them, they're doubling down. They're saying you need a shot every 2 months. We talked about that about 2 years ago. They might have you have to take a shot once a year or something. And people said, that's ridiculous. They would never do that. Once you get the shot once, it's over. Every 2 months. That's the Secretary of Health for the United States of America recommending that, even when everything's come out to show those shots are deadly. They're just going for the gold, and they could care less what we think about it. Now getting into the progression of warfare, and this is Darshan Jagar, but he just went through some things here to explain the different generations of warfare real quickly so we understand how the fifth generation of warfare is different. First generation warfare refers to conflicts in the ancient and post-classical periods that were fought with large numbers of men utilizing line and column tactics and under state control. So it's like we talked about, like the Civil War, you got two lines of people, they line up with their guns and they shoot each other. That was the first generation. Second generation warfare was when then muskets started to have rifling inside of them. So you have the rifling inside of the barrel, so your bullet is far more accurate and you can shoot people at a greater distance away. And then they had breech-loading weapons. It also was when machine guns started and indirect fire. So where people would be back on a hill or something just indiscriminately just mowing down people. So warfare started to separate out more where you weren't so close to each other all the time. And as that happened too, it allowed then the armies, if you had the rifles that were sighted in and the artillery, you could be further back, like I said. But third generation warfare is centered on utilizing strategies from technology that relied on speed, stealth, and surprise to go beyond the enemy's lines and devastate their forces from behind. And this is a lot of the tactics of guerrilla warfare, where there started to be more strategy of, we're going to take little groups of men, they're going to slip in, maybe come under the water and come up, and like the SEALs, and attack people from behind when they didn't expect it. They didn't even know they were there in their midst. Also, then third generation is where the aerial battles started. So things started to change, because then all of a sudden you're being attacked from the air. And again, planes can be up, miles up, dropping bombs, and you can't get to them. There's no way to stop them from doing that. Then fourth generation warfare was warfare. It was characterized by a postmodern return to decentralized forms of warfare, blurring the borders between war and politics, soldiers and civilians. Terrorism is a perfect example of that. The little terror cells that'll go around and do things, even like blowing themselves up. That's a different type of warfare where you're killing yourself to accomplish your goal. But that's what makes fourth generation a little bit different. Also, soldiers for hire, where you actually go hire soldiers to fight for you or to go attack an enemy. So it's not even your citizens, it's not your government, it's others that are doing it. You're just paying for it. So there's different things. Then we move into what the focus is, fifth generation warfare. And with the emergence of the internet in the digital age, we have entered fifth generation warfare. Fifth generation warfare is mostly non-kinetic activity such as social engineering, disinformation campaigns, usage of cutting-edge technologies like information technology, artificial intelligence, cyber attacks, gray zone warfare, psychological warfare, information warfare, cyber warfare, biological warfare. They're all part of fifth generation warfare. And of course, there's weapons that are part of the advances too, but we're going to focus on the weapons that are trying to change the hearts and minds of people, manipulating them to do what they want to do. I think a lot of Americans first became aware of this different type strategy in 1999 when the unrestricted warfare document came out from some Chinese generals, where it showed that's what they were doing to us. They were going to use everything except weapons to attack us, undermine us, make us immoral, push pornography, drugs, just try to just destroy the culture so it collapses. And the communists have been doing a lot of that for generations in America. They understood that. Antonio Gramsci's really the father of that, as well as some of the popular Edward Bernays, the propaganda guy, and some of the advertising agencies. But up until recent times, it wasn't so purposeful like it is today. Sun Tzu said 2,500 years ago, all warfare is based on deception. And now they, because of technology, have learned ways to deceive where you don't know you're being deceived. You don't know you're at war because it was just an ad on TV that came on during the football game. Is that warfare? Yeah, it is. It's strategic warfare. Or it was just, you know, something that was talked about on the newscast. And they're putting little lines of information out there that start to slowly brainwash and influence. In interest of giving you the big picture before we focus in on the fifth generation, they're saying right now that the sixth generation warfare is going to be where they can manipulate space and time. and I don't even totally understand it, but it's going to be totally different. And then seventh generation, they say, is probably going to be where it's a holographic warfare, where it's holograms fighting and things, totally bizarre stuff. So summed up in one sentence, fifth generation warfare is the deliberate manipulation of an observer's context in order to achieve a desired outcome. You're going to manipulate how they see the world, what they think is going on, what the science is and what the facts are. You're going to manipulate that in such a way to get them to do what you want them to do voluntarily. And we saw that over the last 2 years with COVID. The whole thing was fifth generation warfare. Just manipulate them and brainwash them, put on the mask. Oh, when you put on the mask, you're fighting for freedom of others. You care about human life. You're there. You're part of the collective, and you care about everyone when you do that. And those that don't are selfish, and they're trying to kill people. And they set up this narrative where people, oh, I better get my mask on. They weren't given scientific facts to tell them, here's why you do this or that. They just said, do what we tell you to do. Well, this isn't anything new, but they've perfected it because of the information distribution center they have now, where everyone has a device on them all the time that they can be brainwashing them through. And the information out there now is so great, it gives them more vehicles to be able to slowly influence you without you knowing it. There's a great article by Daniel Natel that is called Manipulating the Masses, and he gets into the history more of here's where this started, and here's where they learned how to perfect it for what we have today, where they're masters of manipulation. But he talks about back in the 20s is the first time people started to realize they were being propagandized. They started to realize after World War I, all the things they had been told about the enemy or about what was going on that wasn't true. That was a total lie that their own government had told them. And people started to turn on the disinformation. They learned in Britain right after World War I that the first British Ministry of Propaganda had hired best-selling authors and things to write the propaganda that would make the people, again, be willing to go to war when they didn't want to go to war, and being where they would buy war bonds because, oh, we need to support this war. One of the people was socialist author H.G. Wells, and they hired him to come up with fabrications designed to manipulate the emotions of undiscriminating readers. These shocking stories allowed propagandists to justify the war, encourage men to enlist, raise funds for the war loan schemes, and shake the United States from its neutrality. America did not want to go to war. But the propaganda was so great, that's what they did. It was only after the armistice that the public discovered that the Germans had not, in fact, been using babies for bayonet practice, or crucified Belgians, or rolling out giant wooden rape machines. Those are some of the things our government had told Americans and the British people, oh, these are just like satanic people. They're just killing their babies with bayonets and stuff. And none of that was going on. But they created that monster so we go, oh, we got to go fight. And it was all a lie. And tens of millions of boys died from Europe and America for nothing. I mean, it was for nothing. It's so disgusting. On the other side of the Atlantic at this same time, the Committee for Public Information was formed. Isn't it funny how noble sounding all their little titles are? The Committee for Public Information. Well, who's not for getting information out to the public? That was our first propaganda department in America. One former propagandist for it was a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist, Walter Lippmann, which you've probably heard of, who later disclosed many of the fabrications that he had personally been involved in with his celebrated book, Public Opinion, in 1922. Just total distortion. It's like January 6th. It was insurrection. Well, it's a total lie. Police were killed, five of them. Total lie, and they just keep pushing it. And because that's part of the manipulation and brainwashing. Anyway, he discussed in that book the techniques used to trick the public. One of these methodologies was the use of stereotypes, a term he coined. He came up with that term, stereotype. A stereotype was a vivid mental picture of a thing that the propagandist confabulated and disseminated among the population to prime them to mentally see certain screen realities. It's like you're watching a movie. They're trying to get you to see something on the screen, the reality that's on the screen, not the reality that's all around you. Lippmann wrote, "For the most part, we do not first see and then define. We define and then see." One of the stereotypes that the Committee for Public Information was tasked with was creating that of a bloodthirsty barbarian, as the Germans. And this is World War I I'm talking about. It's not Hitler. And they had posters, and they had of these, you know, monsters like a King Kong, that's the Germans just abusing people and killing people. And this is a key. Listen to this. Lippmann adds, "Without some form of censorship, propaganda in the strict sense of the word is impossible. You have to cut free speech." That's why that's going on in our country right now. He said this 100 years ago. "Propaganda in the strict sense of the word is impossible without some form of censorship. In order to conduct a propaganda, there must be some barrier between the public and the real event. Access to the real environment must be limited." That's 100 years ago. That's why the media today is all fake, fabricated news, because it's not to tell you what's going on. It's to tell you what they want you to think is going on so you will do as you were told. I mean, it's really incredible. One of these manipulations I just saw this week, the Chinese army now is dressing their military soldiers in white uniforms so it looks more medical, like they're there to help the people. So when the videos get out of those people in white abusing the citizens and doing horrible things I can't even talk about that I saw just this week, it's like, oh, those are the healthcare professionals. They're just trying to help those people not die of COVID. But it's just the military dressed in white to manipulate people to think that's what's going on. To make the propaganda effective, to generate the virtual reality landscape of the pseudo-environment, as Lippmann called it, the media would have to become a filter interposing itself between the public and the real environment. And they've perfected that now for 100 years. And I think that is so interesting. That's how it first started, and they realized, here's what we need to do. The government would ramp up censorship efforts to silence anyone calling attention to the pseudo-environment. So anyone saying, I don't think these vaccines are safe and effective. I don't think the mask does anything. Every medical study I've read says a mask does nothing to stop the spread of a virus. Anyone saying that, this breaking down their world, has got to be censored and attacked. And he goes on, and this is just what President Woodrow Wilson did. America's first official censorship board was for mail, telegrams, pamphlets, books, newspapers, plays, photographs, and even the conversations of average citizens were all subject to restrictions. This is 100 years ago in America. Listen to this. In 1917, the Espionage Act was passed, which made it a crime to interfere with military recruitment and the operations of American armed forces. I mean, of course, they define that however they want. If you're saying we shouldn't be at war over there, I don't think our boys should be dying, that's interfering. That was a crime in 1917 in America, just like today. The following year, in 1918, the so-called Sedition Act was added to the Espionage Act that limited free speech during the war. Well, we're at war, and so we have to limit free speech. You can't say anything negative against our government, against the military, against the war effort in Ukraine. Oh, I'm sorry, in World War I. I mean, it is exactly where we are today. The truth of wartime propaganda began to seep into the public domain with large segments of the population declaring their outrage upon reading works such as those of Walter Lippmann or his colleagues and fellow propagandists Edward Bernays. Now, he is key in this. He's the one that wrote the book Propaganda. And I'm just reading a little bit more of this because then it ties in. This is how we've gotten to where we are. It is so important. It was Bernays who, seeing that the term propaganda had fallen into disfavor after the war, coined the term public relations as a substitute. Public relations department, every business has it, the government has it, everything has it. That's a propaganda department, but it's called public relations. He changed that name so they could keep doing what they're doing. Bernays, who conceptualized using propaganda not on enemy nations, but on domestic populations. He's the one that said, wait a minute, just what we do in advertising to get someone to buy a product that's not good for them, but we make them feel like it is, or they really don't need, but we make them feel like they do need it. Just that, those same techniques, we can do this to the American people or any population and get them to do what we want. He was soon sought after by most of America's largest corporations and the government. It was Bernays who envisioned running society not as a republic, but as a technocracy. He had that vision in 1923, before the movement even started. In his book, Crystallizing Public Opinion, he crowed that mass media made a new form of social control possible. And he talked on and on about it. And this started spreading all over. Other people started to work on this. So with everyone understanding these principles of propaganda from Edward Bernays, the power of the press became monumental. A single journalist could generate a slogan or a catchphrase and see it proliferated across the culture, with people uttering it as if it were their own original thought. And we see that today. Most of the conversation we have is people just quoting what they've heard somebody else say. It's not their own thoughts, their own ideas. It's really interesting. And this, again, is 100 years ago. Gustav Le Bon, who published his first book on the mass psychology, The Crowd, in 1895, went into further detail about these things. And this is even before them. So he was a great influence on these people. But he understood this about a crowd. Their individual personalities receded, and they became atoms in a larger organism. Things that an individual would never have done on his own, he will participate in when consumed within a crowd. So once some of these people understood that point, people will act differently in a crowd than they will on their own. He understood then, if you can do this successfully, and you can generate the false impression that the crowd is doing something, it will make everybody else want to do it. And he was extremely successful in his advertising campaigns, but also then as he began to work with our government and the CIA and the FBI, learning how to manipulate people. It was Bernays who conceptualized using influencers to shepherd the rest of the public into a form of group consciousness. We think that's new, influencers today on social media and stuff. This is 100 years ago. They would pick the Hollywood stars. They'd pick the athletes. They'd pick the music people and get them to go, listen, here's what you need to do. You need to say Donald Trump is evil. I would never vote for him, as often as possible. Okay, we'll do that. And they do that. And all the people that look up to them because, oh, they played Superman in a movie or whatever, they go, oh, Donald Trump's no good. And all of a sudden you have huge influence over the whole society. But you can say, it wasn't us. That's what that movie star said. We didn't say that. And so it looks like you're not in control, but you're in total control because you are in control of the different groups that have access to the hearts and minds of the people. Anyway, that's just a little of the history of how this started to change, starting in the late 1800s and coming forward, where they realized that's a far better tactic than just muscle or control. It's where you manipulate people to do what you want. Here's a little description of it to to give you a different view of the same thing by James Corbett. But he says, fifth generation warfare is an all-out war that is being waged against all of us by our governments and the international organizations to which they belong. It is being waged against each and every one of us right now, and it is a battle for full spectrum dominance of every single aspect of your life. Your movements and interactions, your transactions, even your innermost thoughts and feelings and desires. Governments the world over are working with corporations to leverage technology to control you down to the genomic level, and they will not stop until each and every person who resists them is subdued or eliminated. And then he says this, the most incredible part of all of this is that so few know that the war is even taking place, let alone that they are a combatant in it. I heard that and I was reading through this as with lots of other articles this week. I thought, the Bible tells us that in Ephesians 6. He goes, you wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and spiritual wickedness in high places. And I'm like, isn't that amazing? God told us, no, this is a battle you can't see. Why? Because their commander in chief is Satan. And he is after our hearts and our minds. The seat of our affections, the things that influence us to believe the things we do. That's always been his battle going on. But now technology is able to allow men to help him do that. That's why that's what this battle is all about. But I thought, isn't that amazing? Christians know, oh yeah, God already told us this 2,000 years ago. This is a spiritual battle because everything is spiritual. And so what's some different ways this is happening? Information warfare. Here's an example. Climate change. That's information warfare. Global warming. That's fifth generation war because it's being waged against all humans on the earth. And how are they doing it? They're using fear, fake science, lies, manipulation, coercion. What are they using that for? To force people to collapse their own societies and communities and economies for the sake of the planet. And as a result, there's going to be famine, poverty, starvation, suffering, death. But we're told in the propaganda, it's worth it. Whatever you have to do, it's worth it for the planet. That's all that is. That is fifth generation warfare. And it's accelerating. They're putting more pressure. Just this week, I saw more and more people talking about words are violence. They're using those terms because, like Walter Lippmann said 100 years ago, you have to silence the opposition if you want your propaganda to be effective. You have to silence it. And they're like, okay, we got to keep cranking up the attack on free speech, saying, no, no, we can't have free speech. Words are violence, and words cause other people to be hurt. And so that's where we're going. Perhaps the most insidious part of the fifth generation info war is that it has become so normalized that everyone knows it's happening, but no one thinks of it as warfare. Tell me if this isn't how you think. I know I've thought this way many times. Of course, everything is advertising and propaganda. Of course, it's being used to manipulate my behavior. That's just how the world works, isn't it? So we kind of know that's going on, but we don't understand the level it's going on and how effective it is. And so then we just kind of ignore, like, it's not really that big. So another part of this then is you got the information warfare, you have the neurological warfare. This is really interesting to me as I was studying this. Right now, the U.S. military and militaries all around the world, they're developing weapons that include things like drugs, bugs, toxins, and devices that can either enhance or disrupt the cognitive functions of their target. Things they can aim at you or your cell phone, but when it's around you, it puts off rays that allow you not to be able to think properly. Your cognitive abilities hamper, where you're like, oh, I don't know. It's like when you eat something you're allergic to, if you've ever had that experience, if you're allergic to things, your mind gets kind of foggy. It's hard to think, like, I'm not sure what's going on. They're developing weapons and putting things in the food, possibly in different things, to do that, where they just dumb that mind down, where people are just like, whatever, just tell me what to do. I'm tired. That's part of the fifth generation warfare going on right now. We are at war with an enemy who is literally targeting our brains. Elon Musk, we like him for what he's doing on Twitter, which is great, but he's trying to sell his Neuralink brain chip technology as everyone needs this to be able to exist in the future. This is all out warfare, and the world is changing. Watch this little clip of him just talking about that for a second. It's really sobering that, one, they're trying to create a world where a human is useless in it, worthless, has no value, and can't even be involved in it. You've got to put a computer implant into your brain to even be able to interact or be successful in this world they're trying to create. I don't believe that for a minute. The human being is much more than computing power. They don't understand that. We can just feel things. We can sense things that no computer will ever be able to do. And it can maybe do a math problem faster than we can and things like that. But that's not the point of life anyway. It's relationships. It's influence. It's glorifying God in all that we do, which has nothing to do with this. But watch this clip.
We headed towards digital superintelligence that far exceeds any human. I think it's very obvious.
We're headed towards either superintelligence or civilization ending.
I would argue that AI is unequivocally something that has potential to be dangerous to the public. Digital intelligence will be able to outthink us in every way, and it will simply be able to simulate what we consider consciousness. So to a degree that you would not be able to tell the difference. Like, we will not be able to be smarter than a digital supercomputer. So therefore, if you cannot beat him, join him. The point at which we have digital superintelligence, that's when we pass the singularity, and things become just very uncertain. It doesn't mean that they're necessarily bad or good, but the point at which we pass singularity, things become extremely unstable. So we want to have a human brain interface before the singularity, or at least not long after it, to minimize existential risk for humanity and consciousness as we know it.
Can you imagine how the elites would love it if each of us had a computer chip in our brain? They could hack in there and get us to do whatever. It's crazy. Of course, as Christians, we can't have anything to do with any of that. We are perfect just the way we are. But it's a battle going on, and we need to keep educating others and standing against these evil things that they're trying to do. Biological warfare is another area that they're doing this. The fifth generation biological warfare is being waged against us. The new mRNA vaccine and DNA technologies, they've been normalized over the last 2 years, but those are a weapon against us and can be used very easily to accomplish whatever they're trying to accomplish with that. One is cut world population. The genetically modified organisms, both GMO crops and animals, that are now being unleashed on the world in an uncontrolled experiment. It's like the vaccines. No experimentation, no testing, just put them on the people and let it go. Well, they're doing that same thing now as they're starting to modify animals and things that we eat and making them have certain characteristics. Well, it gets scary when you start messing with the way God designed things to be. The push towards synthetic lab-based food. We've seen that a lot lately, getting you to eat bugs, but also, you know, the billionaires of the world, the eugenicists like Bill Gates, saying, no, we're going to make the food for the people. It will be sustainable. It will be green. And so that's what everyone will have to eat. Natural food systems are, they're not sustainable. Anyway, there's so many different aspects of this that you could probably think of with air and water and all the different things going on, ways they can get control over us by, you know, genetically modifying things. Economic warfare, of course, we're seeing that. That's another non-traditional form of warfare where you collapse economies, you use the dollar like we did in Ukraine with Russia as a weapon. Well, that's changing everything in the whole world, but they're doing that for a point. So as people get scared of the dollar, which they made happen because we started taking the dollar from sovereign countries and saying, oh, we're going to just confiscate your bank accounts and things. People said, well, we don't want the dollar anymore. So many countries now are starting to go, what do we do? What do we do? And they wanted them saying that. Why? Because they've got the solution ready for them. The CBDC, the central bank digital currencies, are the solution to the problem they created by weaponizing our dollar as a weapon of war. Then every country says, if we're ever on America's wrong side, they can confiscate all of our wealth. We're not using the dollar anymore. So even Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock, said this: the war will prompt countries to reevaluate their currency dependencies. Even before the war, several governments were looking to play a more active role in digital currencies and define the regulatory frameworks under which they operate. They don't miss a trick, and they set up everything they need to set up to get their solution to be the solution to the problem they created so they can keep moving things forward. Here's how that's going to work. The central bank digital currency system of programmable money, it'll be able to control when, how, and if you're allowed to transact in the economy at all. We only have to look to recent events in Canada to understand what this will look like. Do you remember that? Just confiscating their bank accounts and seizing those things and their trucks and everything else. On the little clip I showed earlier, the Brazilian Supreme Court is now using facial recognition of the crowds. And when they recognize someone, they are closing your bank account and they're sending their health and human services to take your children from you. Right now in Brazil, supposedly a democratic country. Well, it's not, because their elections have been corrupted like ours have. But that's right now, going on this week. That's what this fifth generation warfare looks like. And if they get the digital currency where they can zero you out anytime they want, you're in real trouble and I'm in real trouble. This perfect control of humanity down to the level of being able to witness and ultimately to allow or disallow any transaction between any individuals at any time represents one of the key objectives of the fifth generation warfare itself. Because if you can make someone in poverty overnight by pushing a button, that gives you a lot of control over people. And most people don't want to be zeroed out, so they'll just go along to get along, even when they don't want to. Remember 1984, the book? Everyone went along because they were scared to death. It's not because they wanted to. They didn't love Big Brother, but they had to pretend to love Big Brother because they didn't want to be abused. That's where we are. And other examples, real quickly, going through as I'm wrapping up here. The transgender movement is part of this fifth generation warfare. How? It is to make you uncertain about everything. If concrete biological facts aren't fixed, then nothing is. That's what they're doing with this. You'll be scared to open your mouth dogmatically ever again about anything because this is a war. When they say, no, that's not a boy or that's not a girl, and there's no way to even define if they are or not, there's no definition of a woman or a man, that's all psychological warfare. That is not reality. No one believes that is true except those who have been brainwashed. And then the elites, they know it's not true, but they know it's a clever tool to destroy the cognitive abilities of everyone where you can't be certain of anything ever again. The entertainment matrix is part of it. Hollywood, the media, and the music industry use all of their power, prestige, and positions to brainwash the masses to follow their example. That's what they do. Here's what Hollywood, the media, and the music industry are doing. They're using pathetic people that are lusting for fame and fortune to guide our actions and beliefs. That's all the people that have risen up are people that said, we'll do anything for fame and fortune. And they said, okay. And that's what Satan does too. If you say, I want fame and fortune, I'll do whatever you say, he will give you fame and fortune. That's why most of the wealthy people of the world have fame and fortune. That's where they got it. But that's Hollywood. And we've seen that so much just recently. Actors and actresses, they just say exactly what they're told to say. They're scared to ever come out and have any opinion that's their own because they're paid not to. If you want to star in the next movie, you better say what we tell you to say. And they're like, okay, I will, because they so lust after fame and fortune. It's such a trap. That's all those people. The media, talking heads, those are people that wanted to be famous. And so the media group said, you have to say these things. Okay, we'll do it. That's all it is. It's attracting the pathetic, lustful people into those industries, and then they see, oh, we can use them. Justin Bieber, who's just some person, you probably know better who he is than I am, but I watched a video of him this week. He's someone that was supposedly a Christian, then got out of that and supposedly getting back into it, whatever. But he said at a meeting with all the higher-ups in the music industry, they brought a child in there and said, if you torture this child, you'll go from being an artist to one of the moguls behind the music. He said that on a video this week. And I thought, what? And he wouldn't do it. And he now is questioning his whole life and all the poor decisions he's made. And he said, I sold my soul to them. That's why I am where I am. But he said, I couldn't do that. He goes, but now I can't get out of my mind that child. Where did they get that child? I didn't do anything to him, but I bet you somebody else there did. A child that was drugged up at one of their parties, and they said, you torture the child and you're in. That's how dark this is. That's how evil this is. I know that's hard to even stomach, but that was just this week I saw that. That's what's going on in Hollywood, in the media, in the music world. It is satanic to the core. This battle is satanic, just like Ephesians 6 told us. It is a spiritual battle and nothing else. And if you don't have on the full armor of God, you are finished in this battle because you will be deceived because the enemy is a master of deceit. He's just using these useful idiots. We feel like, oh, if we took out the George Soros, if we got rid of this person or the Nancy Pelosi, then we'll be okay. It's a lie. That's all part of the narrative they're pushing on us. Because when we think that's the solution, we realize, I can't take out George Soros. And so we give up. We don't do anything. Because we realize, oh, that's just too big a task. That's not our task. What's our task? Let's talk about that as I close. One of the fundamental things we need to do is to say no. And that's so hard in this day and age. I don't know why, but it just is. So just to give an example, say there's a George Soros there, and he's controlling education. So when you realize I can't battle him, he's got more money, he's got more power, he has all these NGOs working toward, I can't battle that. But how can I battle that in a personal way, that at the local level, independently? How can I do that? I can say, if he's controlling the educational system, then I'm pulling my children out. I'm not going to have anything to do with that. So he has lost his power over me because I said no. If he controls the media, then I'm turning off the media. We all have to do that. The only show I know of on all TV that I've seen worth watching is Tucker Carlson. He's the only one that will actually speak truth directly. The only one. The Sean Hannitys and all the other pathetic people on there, they're just playing the game. Our side, their side, wave the flag, all that nonsense. We have to say no. Propaganda only works if you're watching it or listening to it. That's the only way it works. And when you pull out and say, no, thank you, I'm not interested, that's how we start doing it. If they control the food supply, Bill Gates buys up enough pharma, then we say, no, we don't want your food. I need to grow my own food or find people that are growing it and buy directly from them. I need to start pulling off all the entanglements, all the things that have kept me dependent on all these enemies of my country and myself. It's no, I don't need that. and look at your life and look at your reality and go, what are the fundamentals I need? Well, at the fundamental level, we need food, shelter, and clothing. So if you go, okay, am I dependent on the system for any of those things? Food. If I am, where can I find access to food locally from people I know? Or grow a garden myself and raise some animals or whatever. But where I'm getting, that's real close to me. So that will keep going even if you have to have a digital currency to buy at Walmart. I'm not buying from Walmart. I'm buying from my neighbor. Shelter. Try to get out of debt where you have your home. Downsize if you need to, but you have your home where, no, it's paid for. And so I have a place to be. This is my property. Clothing. You can make your own clothing, or clothes last so long today. You can get a few American-made clothing items, and they last you. But we start just looking at all the areas of our life and go, I need to detach. Where if that were to disappear tomorrow, I'd be okay. If they pulled the plug on me being able to have access to whatever they're providing for people in their big monopolies, I'd be okay. I've got all the fundamental things I need right where I am. That's what we need to work toward. Communication. They cut your communication off. Get a landline. That's a great way to talk anyway. But we're always trying to move outside of their control, creating a parallel society where we and those that are like-minded around us, we've created a little world. It might be much smaller than their world, but it has everything I need to survive and thrive in real relationships with real people and real influence. That's what we have to do. We must stop playing their game. We must stop fighting their war. We must stop ceding our power, our authority, our time, our attention, our energy, and our resources to engaging the enemy in their terms, in their battlefield. The only way to win, like James Corbett said, was to not play. We need to not play. I think we need a new mindset, too, as this battle continues to accelerate. It's a mindset that my life is not my own, and there are things worth dying for, and I need not be so fearful of that reality. And then we start looking at our life going, where is my line in the sand? Where is the line I will not cross? If they do that, I'm not playing this game at all anymore. We need to think about that. You can't wait till you're at that moment and then have to decide. It's hard then, but if you've already given yourself up for dead, kind of like the men at the Alamo, I love that, where they knew he drew the line in the sand and said, if you're willing to fight tomorrow when they attack, step across the line. And by the way, we will lose. We're outnumbered 100-1. We will lose. But what we are trying to fight for has great value. And of course, the men all stepped across saying, we're in. Yeah, we're going to die tomorrow. That's okay. We're on the side of right. And that's all that matters to us. That's what we have to remember. That's all that matters. So if they win and they actually kill us or whatever, and they raid our homes and throw us in prison, that's the way it goes, but we have to be still standing for the truth, still speaking truth, still living the truth. I want to show you this last little clip here. It's just a minute long, by Neil Oliver, someone that I like his commentary. I don't know everything about him, but I like the way he talks about things, and he's encouraging people over in England to do what I just said, to start going, no, we're not part of this anymore. But he says it in a great way, and then I'll close right after this.
I wonder what would happen if all of us opposed to what is going on now came together like those Glasgow women of 1915 and just said no. I wonder. When thinking about that time, I'm reminded of real leaders. I've been talking again this week about Ernest Shackleton, who, when all seemed lost, his ship sunk beneath the Antarctic ice and with nothing but flimsy tents, three little boats and 28 men trapped on the pack ice and depending on him for life itself, he said, well, now we'll go home. Our so-called leaders tell us our lives must be filled with hardship while they warm themselves in centrally heated homes paid for with our taxes and look forward to Christmas parties and food and drink and decorations paid for by all of us. That's not leadership. That's an abusive relationship. Shackleton put himself through every hardship he expected his men to endure. He did it first and for longest. What he asked of them, he did too. He said they should leave behind on the ice anything that would not help keep them alive. So saying, he walked to a hole in that ice and dropped in his gold watch and cigarette case to the bottom of the ocean. He led from the front every step of the way and over nearly 1,000 miles of the cruelest sea on earth. And in the end, he got every man home. They called him the boss. He cared not a jot for the comforts of home. Back home once more, he wrote, "We had pierced the veneer of outside things. We had suffered, starved and triumphed, grovelled down and grasped at glory, grown bigger in the bigness of the whole." He was a leader who saw that it was shared endeavour and shared striving that made all else possible. Our leaders would pick our pockets for any gold watches and valuables before climbing aboard our private jets and flying home, leaving us behind on the melting ice. I say we owe them nothing, not our loyalty and not our obedience. If we continue to comply, we build our own prison around ourselves for their benefit. They've promised us the earth while stealing it from us, raping and pillaging its resources only for their own enrichment. I say again, there's nothing to fear if we have each other. Here's the thing. If we set a course for ourselves and back each other every step of the way, we will cross this ocean of darkness together, all the way.
We just have to say no. Ernest Shackleton is one of my heroes, and he was mentally, spiritually, physically tough. And we need to be the same. Our verse for this week is 1 Peter 5:8. Listen to this. "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary the devil, as a roaring lion, walketh about seeking whom he may devour." That's the battle. That's the fifth generation warfare. It's been going on since the beginning of time, but now human beings are joining him in this battle to destroy us, our minds, our hearts, and our souls. I appreciate you greatly. Stand up for the truth, and remember, we are on the side of right, and that's all that really matters in the final analysis. And until next week, God bless you.